The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Reverend Wright, we welcome you to the press club and to take some questions from this gigantic audience we have here of reporters. And so, Reverend Wright, the floor is now yours. Yeah!
I wonder why your local newspaper is going down the toilet. Listen, that's who writes it. And you wonder why no one reads the paper anymore except the blind, the deaf, and the dumb. Listen, they're applauding the man as though he cured polio. Here's a man who called America the land of the Ku Klux Klan. A man who said, God the America. Listen, they're still applauding. You think he cured cancer, brain cancer. Well, that's it. Reverend Jeremiah Spite. I hear that Reverend Jeremiah Spite is going to write a few new books, and we got a sneak peek at some of the titles of Reverend Spite's new books, How to Hate America and Make a Fortune, maybe the biggest one, How to Hate America and Get Invited to Speak Before the National Stress Club. Another big title coming from Reverend Spite in the next 3 years might be The Idiot's Guide to Hating Whitey, or How to Outmaneuver Al Sharpton and Barry Obama in One Easy Hate Speech. Or how about laughing all the way to the KKK bank? Or how to make a very good thing happen to a very bad man? Now, this man, though, by the way, Reverend Jeremiah Spite, frankly, from my point of view, is the gift that keeps on giving. I couldn't wish for anything more to expose Obama's inner man than Reverend Spite. Do you think Reverend Spite is helping or hurting Obama's candidacy? The phone number at the Savage Nation hot board is 1-800-449-8255. Is Reverend Jeremiah Spite helping or hurting Obama's candidacy? You do know that America is made up of more than one race. You do know that. And you do know that there are still some white people in the country. Asian people do exist. And you know there are Hispanic people out there who are not too sure that Reverend Spite speaks for them. And so although 10% of the vote might consist of African Americans, there's still another big 90% that Barry Obama has to appeal to. And I do not think that Reverend Jeremiah Spite is doing Barry Obama a service. But listen to the applause is the main thing. Here is a reverend who's known for hate speech being introduced to the National Press Club, so-called, a business that's in decline. Papers are dying. They don't know what to do to stop the bleeding. And you understand why. In one soundbite, you get the whole picture. Just play it again.
Reverend Sam. Wright, we welcome you to the press club and to take some questions from this gigantic audience we have here of reporters. And so, Reverend Wright, the floor is now yours. Yeah!
I think this was a Nation of Islam meeting, but it's the National Press Club. These are the fools who've destroyed the United States newspaper business. Listen, cured polio? No. Cured brain cancer? No. Could make the deaf hear? No. Could make the blind see? No. He said, I hate America. And for that, the idiots who write the newspapers couldn't stop applauding. Bakersfield, California, you'll be the first up in the Savage Nation. Craig, what's on your mind today? Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Dr. Savage. I just want to put something out there. I have a feeling that perhaps the audience was stacked by members of his church in the same way that the People's Temple in the 1970s used to be a renter crowd for Jimmy Carter.
But how could they get into the National Press Club? These are newspaper reporters in there. This wasn't one of his church services. And my point is that here you have people who call themselves professional journalists applauding a hate speaker like this as though he cured a cancer. My point is that's why newspapers are going broke. It's not just that ads are going to the internet. That's true. It's not that alone. It's that the newspapers are totally out of touch with mainstream America. They're in touch with the far-left radical fringe that Barry, Hussein, Obama is talking to. Don't you get it? Chris, WOR, New York City. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage. I believe no matter how the media is going to try to hide the fact that this is hurting, that it's not hurting his campaign, it most definitely is going to act negative.
It's all that we're talking about in the country. That's all the average person who doesn't even know what's going on knows that Barry Hussein Obama has a hateful preacher, and you can't disconnect the two men for two reasons. He didn't just occasionally go in the church. He sat there for 20 years, and he says he never heard any of this?
Absolutely. And after today, his comments yesterday or today, whenever they were, Reverend Wright, I use that in the pejorative, it just digs in. It just begs the question even more.
Well, you got to understand something. This guy, Reverend Jeremiah Spite, recognizes his time in the sun. He understands there's a dance in the sun he's got here. And he figured he'd step ahead of everybody here in the African-American community and become numero uno. You know he's going to get a book deal out of it. That's all he's thinking about. He is moving into an allegedly a $3 to $5 million new house in Chicago. I know he hates America, and it's the land of the KKK. But somehow he's building himself a mansion in the land of the KKK. How's that happening?
Oh, and, Doctor, he's doing it on the back of the dead soldiers in the Iraqi war. You know, the very thing that he uses.
Did you hear what he said about the U.S. Marines? Listen to this at the NAACP dinner in clip 33. Listen to this one.
It was soldiers of the 3rd Marine Regiment of Rome who had fun with Jesus, who was mistreated as a prisoner of war, an enemy of the occupying army stationed in Jerusalem to ensure the mopping up action of Operation Israeli Freedom.
Isn't that nice? So on top of it all, we now know he hates America, he hates white people, and he hates Jews. Now, how any Jew could vote for him or any white person could vote for him is beyond me, but then many strange things occur in the United States of America. Mike, KNEW, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
I believe Dr. Reverend Wright is now beginning to help Obama, although he did hurt him in the beginning.
You'll have to speak up. I'm having trouble hearing you.
I said I think Reverend Wright is helping Obama, not hurting him, as he's given the opportunity to explain his views more fully than what we heard as sound bites.
You mean the NAACP, the new speech at the NAACP the other night where he compares the Romans who killed Jesus to the U.S. Marines further elucidates the soul of Reverend Wright and that helps him?
I believe so. I personally think.
So you mean most Americans would think that the ancient Romans who crucified Jesus are like our U.S. Marines? You think that's going to sell in America?
I don't know. I don't think that particular point will fail, but I think he can go beyond just what the sound bites we heard, the selectively picked sound bites for over months and months and months. I don't think that is a fair representation of what the man is.
And I think what is the man? What is a fair representation of what the man is?
Well, from what I can tell, he's the man that devoted himself to the community in Chicago for over 30 years. And yet,
Well, you know, Adolf Hitler brought back prosperity to regions of Germany. He brought back food, and there was clean linen again. So I'm not comparing him to Hitler, but let's not look at the small things he did in the community. The issue, I think, is not whether you or I like Reverend Wright. You like him, I don't. The issue is, I think, what effect this is having on Barack Hussein Obama's candidacy. You can't really mean it's helping him in the larger white community. And the majority of voters in this country happen to be of European descent. They're not of African descent. Reverend Wright, I think, clearly is alienating people who weren't sure where they stood with regard to Reverend Spite and Obama.
I agree. I agree with that statement. However,
see, you're a reasonable man. You and I probably disagree on a slew of political points. But so far, we haven't resorted to hating each other, and we haven't resorted to insulting each other. To me, that's a great conversation.
That's right. That's right. And I think that he did help. He did hurt Obama, excuse me, initially. And personally, as an Obama supporter, I wish he would just go away and let
Well, that's mainly my point. I'm not an Obama supporter, but I got to tell you something. I don't know how in the world this guy has the audacity to undermine Obama on a regular basis. He's not helping him.
I wish he would go away. But as a man who has done good things for the community, I think he does deserve the opportunity.
Let me ask you a personal question, because I'm a little curious right now. You and I disagree on Obama, probably everything else. God knows what we agree on. Do you listen to this show simply to hear what your enemy is saying, or is there another reason?
I don't consider you my enemy. I consider us two individuals with similar viewpoints and some differences. So
that's interesting. No, this is good. Where do we agree, Mike?
We agree. I agree with you wholeheartedly on borders, language, and culture. And
amazing. Amazing. Amazing, amazing, amazing. You know, we're both here in the San Francisco market. The show's national, obviously, but you're calling on my local station, KNEW. And here we are, let's say polar opposites politically, and yet I know my audience is very, very broadly way beyond the so-called conservative base. I mean, after all, San Francisco is largely a liberal community, and yet I know my audience pulls from the wider variety of listeners, as are you, I would say, in that wider variety of listeners. And I'm trying to figure out why, what it is that you find appealing about the show, and I guess in some areas we agree.
Definitely, and on the economy as well. I'll
bet you agree with me that the Pirates of Wall Street should be hunted down by the SEC and prosecuted.
Exactly. And I agree with you. There's no way that our country should be sold off to the highest bidder from these foreign countries.
There you go. So this is very intriguing that you're actually a nationalist, as I am in some ways.
I guess so. I agree with that.
That's amazing. Well, I'll tell you, live and learn every day, Mike. I thank you for calling the show. You see, you can learn something every day. Now, we got to take a break, of course. That's what pays the bills, and that's why I'm not a newspaper. That's why I'm not the former editor of the San Francisco Chronicle looking for a job in a cafe as a piccolo player. And I'll be right back.
Savage.
That last caller was one of the most satisfying calls I've had in a very long time. I mean, honestly, you know, you can disagree with someone and not hate him. And it goes back to the If poem by Rudyard Kipling, you know, and not give in to hating kind of thing. But he wasn't hateful either. And I got to admit, I'm pretty hot-tempered and I can revert to real anger when necessary. And I don't like it in myself. It's just the way I am. And I try not to change my nature too much because nature is nature. But going back to the caller, he reminded me of a guy that you could disagree with and actually like. And I think that that's the magic of this show. I'm probably that way to a large percentage of the 10 million listeners I have a week. I don't know what percent probably disagree with me but like me. I can't explain. It's hard to put words on this. This is a magic. There's a magic in talk radio that's never been matched in any other medium. And I don't want to go there again and start telling you all my view of talk radio. It's still it is the most magical of all the mediums and the most difficult to achieve the magic in. How do you like that? No lights, no naked women cavorting about, you know, there's just nothing but ideas when you think about it. Truly the voice helps. What's amazing though, is that I'm just thinking out loud as usual. See, humans are different than other animals, as we all know. And I don't mean just by a few genes. There's a magical element or a mystical element or both to a human being that is not quantifiable. Magical and mystical. There are elements to human beings it's not quantifiable. And it can bring us to the levels of a Beethoven, for example, or to the depths of a guy who puts his daughter in a torture chamber in Austria for 35 years and has five children with her, whatever you want to take, the heights and the depths. What I'm getting at is there's another element, other elements between people, and you can only achieve it if you're very lucky and very talented and through only certain mediums. You know, you could. I used to be a big reader of novels. I'm not anymore. In fact, I had that novelist on last week or the week before. It was not a very good interview. I thought about it. I'll probably never have a novelist on the show again. It's not that he was bad. It's just that talking about a novel to people who haven't read the book is like a waste of time for them. Secondly, the novel is dead. The novel was replaced a long time ago by talk radio, in case you don't know it. Good talk radio is like a living novel. People who did or you still read novels love an evolving talk show where you're learning like a story every day, like a serial. But I'm getting off the topic. We're sticking to Obama. We're talking about the Reverend Jeremiah Spite and what he's doing to the Obama campaign and whether he's helping or hurting him. I mean, to me, there's no question he's not. How much more can he help him with the audience that already agrees with his hateful statements? Can't help them anymore there. So let's use our logic for a minute. The audience for the presidency consists of the entire voting age American who's registered, of whom the majority are white people. They're already leery of Obama because he's not white like them. I mean, come on, let's level with each other. Okay, well, he's parentally, you know, white mom and black dad. Okay. A lot of people would forgive that if he was truly a red, white, and blue American. You know that. You know it and I know it. This country is absolutely ready for a woman or an African-American president. If we got a really borders language culture guy or doll, they would win, hands down, compared to the burnt-out husks that we're getting on the other side. So I don't think it's his race. However, when you have a guy who already doesn't look like the largest majority of the electorate, now calling the country every name under the sun, now comparing the U.S. Marines to the Romans who killed Jesus, how in the world can you say that this man, Reverend Spite, is not actually spiting Obama? He knows what he's doing. I think he has it in for Obama. It reminds me almost of a father who's not happy that his son passed him by, and he wants to bring him down a notch or five. And if you want to go into the psychology of it, it's almost akin to Hillary and Bill. And why Bill keeps undermining Hillary. At every turn, it seems to me that Bill is shafting his own wife because he cannot believe he is now playing second fiddle to his wife. And I think Obama does not like the fact, the Reverend Spite doesn't like the fact that he's playing second fiddle to one of his flock.
Church leaders and elected officials. Do we have a meeting at 11:09 to plan the day that we in calling on justice will close this city?
Well, there he is. There he is. He's back. The last week he was posing as a meteorologist, I would say a professor of meteorology. He was an expert on global warming. In fact, his Al Sharpton's expertise in science is so great that Al Gore gave him a large stipend to be an expert on global warming. We don't know whether he got past the 7th or 8th grade in science, but that shouldn't stop Al Gore. We don't know if he got past the 7th or 8th grade in science. So I don't condemn Al Sharpton for taking Al Gore's money. But here's a man, Al Sharpton, who threatens to close down the city because he doesn't like the verdict in a trial. Well, there's a man who knows an awful lot about fire and heat, so perhaps we'll have to keep watching to see if he, in fact, does close the city down. I know that when I heard that, I wanted him arrested. That's not free speech. That's actually yelling fire in a crowded theater. By the way, let me explain something to you. If I said on this radio show I'm going to close down San Francisco, and I ask the truckers listening to this show, and I know there are many truckers who listen to the show, to go to this city at a certain date, a certain time, to tie up the three bridges into San Francisco and shut off their big rigs, I would go to jail for that. You understand it? There's no question I would go to jail for God knows how many different crimes. So why does the law apply to me, but it doesn't apply to this guy? Okay? That's what I want to know. And then there's a secondary issue. It's interesting to me that a few weeks ago I said, have you noticed that all the rabble-rousers like Jackson and Sharpton have been told to dummy up during the Obama campaign because the Obama people know the last thing they want is white people to be reminded of the turbulence that this country has gone through over the last 30 or 40 years. And they want to put that behind us. Remember, Obama's running on a campaign of unity and to be sort of a post-racial guy and bringing us together. Let's put aside his politics. And so, all right, so a lot of white liberals who let's go. Now, you suddenly start seeing this going on. You got Reverend Spite. You got the so-called Reverend Sharpton threatening to close down New York because now he's judge, jury, and executioner. He's now not only a judge, he's also the jury and the executioner now. So anytime he doesn't like a verdict, he'll threaten to burn a city down, close it down. It's unbelievable to me. It's astounding to me how they get away with it, these people who do these things. Yes, I said these people, meaning these people, professional agitators. How do they get away with threatening to close a city down and not get thrown in a slammer? I'd get put in a slammer if I closed the city down. I'll take your calls right now at the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. MichaelSavage.com is the website. You're listening to the one and only radio talk show of this type. There's nothing like it. You know that and I know that. It's different. It's different because I'm different. 15 years, you know, doing the same show every day and still doing it with vigor and with insight and intelligence. And every day is not as good as the day before. I recognize that. I'm a little worn out today because I was on my boat for 3 hours yesterday on a so-called opening day with six or seven family and friend people, which I really enjoyed. The bay was very white and choppy, and I love that. That was fun. Then I went to dinner with eight friends at night. I never do this. I'm like so asocial in that way. I didn't say anti. I said basically grousing, keeping to myself, sitting with the dog, just looking at the clouds, whatever, looking at a plant. I'm really not into a lot of people anymore. When I was younger, yes, I enjoyed that. You get older, you sort of move to yourself in a certain way. You start thinking about the eternal. So to for me to be with eight people during the day and then like flip eight different people at night, not easy for me. But I enjoyed it. I fundamentally like people, particularly if they're the people I want to be with. I don't particularly like to be in a big crowd. So I'm saying as a result, I'm a little tired, that's all. But here we go. I mean, we're moving along. The show is alive. I can feel it. I feel the electricity. I feel the groove is back. And I'm going to go to the calls right now. Los Angeles, Jason, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I'm a Jewish conservative, and I've spoken to you before. And the most offensive—
You're a Jewish conservative in Los Angeles? There's 10 of you down there, aren't there?
No, there's actually 7 of us.
So you don't even have a minion. Okay, I got it.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, we got a minion. but what I want to, I've spoken to you before, and by the way, I want to tell you, anything you do, if you run for office, anything you decide to do, I'll give you my writing services for free.
That's very sweet. Well, you know what I intend to do? This. This is what I intend to do, is this. I'm going to do radio and radio and more radio because there's nothing else I want to do. I don't think there's anything else I can do, Jason. I could do stand-up. I've done big events. It's too stressful for me. I don't like that. So anyway, what's on your mind today?
What's on my mind, the most offensive thing to me last night about the Reverend Wright speech was there were two people in the audience, an author and a community organizer, or as you would say, a community organizer.
Yeah.
And they were two Jewish organizers, of course. And Reverend Wright made a real point of emphasizing that. And he said, we have an author, a Jewish author, and hit that a couple times.
Mm.
And it was so offensive to me. To me, it was like when Hitler would get a couple token Jews to hold up, and the Jews would say to the other Jews, see, he's not so bad. And then when
Wow.
we're not done with
Well, I mean, you're not comparing Obama to Hitler. I mean, I did it myself, but we're not comparing him. You're saying it has the same distasteful feeling as an event in the Third Reich. But, you know, you want to touch on that sore topic, Jason, we could do that. You live in the heart of Jewish liberalism.
Right.
You see it. You hear it. It must drive you insane.
Oh, it does. It does. But what
could you explain to me the mindset of very rich people in Los Angeles who spend a lot of money getting the best accountants they can find to find every tax dodge in the world, getting excited about a candidate who would take away various tax dodges and raise taxes by 15 to 20%? Can you explain that to me?
All psychological. I don't think it's business. I think they have some self-hating in them. I don't understand it. They love the
but they spend a fortune on accountants who teach them how to get around paying all the taxes, whatever. Right? This investment, that investment. You read about it all the time in Hollywood. A lot of them get taken, you know, in investments, but a lot of them don't. They have very wise men advising them on how to avoid paying, you know, a lot of money in taxes. They avoid here. Then they want to vote for a guy who's a far leftist who's going to raise taxes on an extraordinary level. What sense does this make, Jason?
It makes the best I can say is there are so many self-hating Jews, and I don't understand that. I mean, the most I know about it is
I wouldn't say self-hating Jews. I don't think that's operational. I would say liberalism is a mental disorder. It's the only thing that works for me. I think they're crazy.
Yeah, I do too. I'll tell you, I understand what I understand of it. Being close to it is even more confusing. Stepping away from it by listening to your show and helps me to see how crazy it is. It's like a reality.
Well, you say there are 7 conservative Jews in Los Angeles, and you're one of the 7. There is hope for you, though, with cloning now. The 7 could become at least 14.
Yeah, then we'll have our minions.
Thanks for calling. The time is 42 minutes after the hour. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. KNEW, San Francisco. Mike, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, like you, I'm a nationalist. I'm a young black man here in the city. Mm-hmm. The question I have for you, it seems like this is where the media and conservative white America is taking this issue with Reverend Wright. Is what is acceptable or the best way a black preacher is to preach among its people or its community?
I'm saying you're saying you want my opinion on what would be the best way for a black preacher to reach his flock?
Yes.
I don't have an answer because I don't know that community as well as he does. However, now let me finish this. Appealing to the lowest common denominational element of that community is not the best way to reach any audience. In other words, again, to use a stark analogy, I've done live events, 5,000 people, whatever, at the Concord Pavilion. I did some very good stuff, but I didn't go down to the level that I knew I could have gone to if I wanted to whip that crowd up into a frenzy. I could have gotten really, really nuts up on that stage, and I could have said vile things that would have gotten the crowd to its feet cheering. There was a man who did that in the last century. One was in Italy named Mussolini. Another was in Germany named Adolf Hitler. There was another one in Russia named Joseph Stalin. So, in other words, going to the base of the audience and whipping them up in a frenzy with hatred is not, in my mind, very spiritually advisable. Why can't he do it without hating somebody?
I don't think he hates anybody. I mean, I think it's a matter of opinion now about how you interpret his speeches.
Well, when he says God de America, that's not hatred for a man of the cloth to use the D word against his own country that has given him fame and fortune? To call it the United States of KKK? How can he say that? You think the whole country is made up of the Ku Klux Klan? Does that include Asian people and Hispanic people? They're all members of the Ku Klux Klan?
No, I believe that the powers that be have the mentality and stereotypes of the Klan.
So all white people, in your mind, are Klan-like?
The powers that be, whatever they are. They have stereotypes.
Okay, so who would that be?
I would say most of the Bush family.
I can't change your opinion. You know, you say they have the mentality of the Ku Klux Klan. The last thing I would think is that the Bushes are quite liberal, as far as I can tell. I wouldn't think they would be the type to have to hold those views at all. I think they're kind of an evolved family in that regard. But why do folks of African-American people of African-American heritage have to think all white people want to hang them from a tree?
Are you asking me that?
Yeah, I'm asking you that. Where do you get that idea from? You're telling me there are no Caucasian people who've ever been kind to the African-American community?
Correct. Not all white people. Not all white people. And I'll stress that. Not all white people. We feel like they're tourists. I would say the powers that be, people who control the economic success for individuals, people that
Whoa, wait a minute. You think that the power the power structure determines which individuals will get ahead and which individuals will not? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Hold on. Well, I agree with you. And the power structure determines that white men shall not apply. In fact, the exact opposite of what you're alleging is true. Right now, affirmative action is the law of the land, even though it's illegal. And black males are advanced beyond white males in virtually every police department in the country, every fire department in the country, every teaching job in the country. Women are advanced above white males. Blacks are advanced above white males. So in that regard, you're right. The government is intervening, but it's not on behalf of white males.
Are you serious? Black men are succeeding far ahead of white males in all aspects of business?
Well, how do you explain that I have run into black guys in their 30s? I've done it not every day of my life. And they come up to me and they look quite happy and successful. How are they doing it? They like the show. They say, hey, Dr. Savage, we love your show. That was during the Kobe Bryant trial. I don't know if you go back to that period of time. Were you listening to this program by any chance at that time, Mike?
Yeah. I've been listening to you for 5 years, and I love everything you do. I just differ with you. I'm more of a libertarian. You're a conservative, but I love everything you do. You've taught me a lot since I've listened to you. But
you could be the guy I ran into in the bar. Two tall guys. Well, compared to me, everyone's a tall guy. No, they were two very tall guys. And they were wearing nice clothes, you know, and they looked like they were business guys. And I don't mean they were like, you know, billionaires, but they looked like they're pretty content in whatever they were doing. And they didn't look at me like a white guy speaking to them as black guys. They just liked the fact that I was able to read the Kobe Bryant thing from a mile away at that time. But, Mike, why do you feel that you're under the gun more than a white guy? Can I ask you what you do?
Yeah, I'm a construction management. My degree's in project engineering.
So you're an intelligent man. You're a college graduate. You're saying you felt overt hatred and racism in college and in your construction field?
The fact that I'm labeled as black before an American pisses me off from the beginning. And since that is part of the term, then, already you're making a decision.
Well, wait a minute now. You're saying you're blaming the society at large for defining you as an African-American with the emphasis on African. But how do you define it as Italian-American? Italian-American. Yes. Are they defined as Italians before they're Americans? I found that to be odd also, by the way. When people are hyphenated and defined by the lesser before the more.
Well, I don't like the term.
That's an interesting question. What is the set and what is the frame? Is a person's race or ethnicity stronger than the identity with the nation? It probably is, actually, when you think about it. It probably is. When you look at people, I'll bet you, as an intelligent person who can analyze things, don't you look at white people and say, he's probably Italian, he's Irish, he's Jewish? Don't you do that?
It's hard, because their skin complexion is kind of the same.
Now you tell me all white people look alike. Come on.
It's hard to say that with
No, come on. But it's true, actually. In this modern age, the European Americans have become homogenized. It's very hard to tell. When I was a kid growing up, it was much easier. I mean, you knew the ethnic groups. Truthfully, it was very, very clearly demarked. And it wasn't because people walked around in different clothing. You could see it in their skin and in the way they related.
Yeah.
If a guy was carrying a mortadella, you knew he was one group. If he was carrying matzah, you knew he was another. If he was carrying a beer pitcher, you knew he was another. You get it, Mike?
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So the more I think about it, I've just had a satori in Savage Land, and we hear that Reverend Spites, let's start again, Obama. Race was not really the issue. It was not talked about at all. If it was there, it was in the background. Now Reverend Spite pops up, and his sudden infamy and the obsession with him proves to me, and this is an insight that I think is unique, it'll be copied immediately, that race is front and center in this race. Once again, although we thought race was behind us, It was silently in the background. For better or for worse, this proves to me that race is very much front and center in this race. And you could quote Michael Savage on it. When you steal the idea, do me a favor, put quotes around it. Michael Savage says race is front and center in this race. And gasoline, they say, is going to be $10 a gallon. Can you believe this? In the next year or two. But I love when they tell you that. That's not bad compared to Europe. I remember that was years ago when we went through the oil crisis where there were lines around the block in the 70s. They told you how much they were paying in Europe. That's like saying people were starving in Europe after World War II. You know, what does Europe have to do with us? We always tell it compared to something. So in other words, molesting a 13-year-old child in America is nothing compared to Europe where they molest them at 9 in Brussels. But anyway, it's neither here nor there. Gas rising to $7 to $8 a gallon. Another researcher says $8 to $10 a gallon. You know, I'm not a poor guy. Okay, I can afford it. I don't know what the average working person, moreover, the most important element here, what the heck is a truck driver supposed to do here? They can't make a living. Where is this going to end? What this means is that Bush has lost control of, he has no leverage over OPEC. If he ever had any, and I'm not so sure he wasn't simply a lever of OPEC, as many suspect, the entire Bush administration, more and more as the administration winds down, looks like an arm of Saudi Arabia. I mean, it's been alleged for a long time. God knows it could be an arm of some other octopus, too. But having said that, he has no leverage over any of the OPEC countries whatsoever. Why shouldn't gas be $25 a gallon? What's to stop it? What is Bush going to do, send an aircraft carrier that fires rubber bullets at the enemy? This man specialized like Battleship Potemkin. Our whole military has become Battleship Potemkin. We send out the dreadnoughts, and an Iranian speedboat pulls up, and they got the stainless steel marbles in their hand already. They're ready to go to the toilet the minute the boat pulls up.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Soldiers of the 3rd Marine Regiment of Rome who had fun with Jesus, who was mistreated as a prisoner of war. An enemy of the occupying army stationed in Jerusalem to ensure the mopping up action of Operation Israeli Freedom.
Blue Monday, Blue Monday.
Yeah, it's a Blue Monday for the Obama campaign. Let me tell you. With a friend like him, he doesn't need any enemies, as they say. Did you hear this? All right, thanks, Fats. Listen, you could quote me. Savage says race is front and center in this race. I was the first to say it in the media. It was just copied by Puffball. I'm sure they turned the radio off before going on the air. That's okay. And we thought race was behind us, but let me tell you, it is not. It has become the issue of this campaign. It is the issue. I think race has superseded the economy as an issue, and that is because of this egomaniac, America-hating Reverend Jeremiah Speight. Now, I'm giving you in my armchair analysis of why this guy is doing it. Number one, he recognizes that it's a short dance in the sun that we all have. We all have a short dance in the sun called life. He knows this is his moment. He knew this is his best shot to become famous. Rather than simply infamous. So he got guys like the baggy-eyed Bolshevik on PBS to give him a softball interview. one liberal after another is trying to, you know, reinvent this guy and make him into what he isn't. And he knows that there's a book deal and endless lectures as a result of this. So he's doing it, number one, for himself and his own self-gain. No question about it. He went from being an obscure crackpot, America-hating, white-hating preacher up in Chicago somewhere to a national, let's say a national figure. Let's just put it to you that way. Now, so as I say, his sudden infamy has launched him into the stratosphere politically. He may even run for Congress. In fact, when Obama loses, he may run against Obama for the Senate, for all we know. We'll have to wait and see. Now, from my point of view, first of all, I'm white. I'm not of African American. I'm not black. I want you to know that. I don't know. A lot of people think I'm black. My voice. I've had guys say to me, "You're a white guy." I don't know where that came from, but fine. Just so you know. Other people think I smoke. I don't smoke. Other people think I like corned beef. I don't. Other people think I like pastrami. I do not. For me, as a white guy, you have to take it for what it is. Do I say I love all black people? That would be ridiculous. But I have been a supporter of Clarence Thomas for a very long time because I like his politics and I think that he was unfairly treated and I think he handles himself very well. I like Colin Powell. He was a little liberal in some areas, but I really respected Colin Powell. The guy had real accomplishments, genuine accomplishments as a human being. He went very far and, you know, as a great military man or a fine military man, I respected the guy. He also had a great demeanor. So to me, it isn't about race. You give me a candidate who is for borders, language, and culture, and I don't care what his race is. I would support him or her or his sexuality. I would almost go as far as to say sexual orientation, but I don't think I'm there yet. You get me a borders, language, culture candidate, and I will work for that candidate. I don't have one. You know, you say McCain. I don't know how in the world. I know how. When you have a communist left-wing socialist press that calls John McCain a conservative right-winger or George Bush a conservative right-winger, it's because compared to them, sure, they're conservative right-wingers. But they're not. Where's the borders in either of them? Tell me where the borders is in Bush. Doesn't exist. Tell me where the borders are with McCain. Never discusses them. Tell me where the issue of language exists with George Bush. Doesn't exist. Likewise, down the line. They're not conservatives by definition, not by my definition. They're middle-of-the-road Democrats of 20 years ago. In fact, by comparison, John F. Kennedy was far more conservative than either Bush or McCain, incidentally, just to show you how the times they have been a-changing. And I know which way the wind blows, trust me, because I am the weatherman of the radio, to use an old adage. Only I didn't set any bombs on the cars in order to know which way the wind blows. Nor did I have a salon with other left-wingers about how to put bombs on the cars. So let's get back to it. Race is front and center in this race. Why would Reverend Wright this weekend throw more verbal hand grenades? He's actually pouring gasoline on the fire. And I believe he is. You're watching Obama as the amazing shrinking man. He went from almost a luminary stature a few weeks ago, almost untouchable a few months ago, almost untouchable. He was the Messiah. Of course, we knew he was a tofu Messiah. I've been saying that for a long time, but to those who were throwing themselves at him and fainting before him, the man was the Messiah, the new Holy Grail. He was the new hope for America. And as time has gone on, because of Hillary's, you know, excellent strategy and campaign, which is opposition research, which is what she specializes in. After all, you're dealing with one of the most powerful women on earth, who comes from a lot of years of hard campaigning, and she knows what works. Love doesn't work in politics. Hate works. And undermining the other candidate works much better than loving the other candidate. That's something John McCain hasn't learned yet, the shoe salesman. He'll be fitting Basswegians if he keeps this up. Would you like a pair of slippers to go with those Basswegians? We have a special this month in the new John McCain shoe store in Tempe, Arizona, you know, a year from now. You buy two pair, you get one kidney free. I mean, what is this guy thinking? Who is going to vote for this schlepper? He's like a schlepper. People starting to say that Hillary looks tougher than him. Hillary comes out and says, I would nuke Iran, basically. And this Schmendrick has nothing to say about anything. So, trust me, you get a tough cookie like Hillary. She knows what she's doing, and she undermined Obama. And she's so smart that she didn't actually do it. She dug up Reverend Jeremiah Spite's statements and then guilt by association. You say, well, is guilt by association fair? It is not always fair. In fact, most of the times it's unfair. However, it's very fair in this case because this is not a casual friend. Reverend Spite is not a casual acquaintance of Obama. By Obama's own admission, he sat in the man's church for 20 straight years. I mean, not every minute, but he loved him so much, the man who said this is the United States of KKK, that he had him baptize his two daughters. Obama loved him so much that he had this man who called it the United States of KKK marry him. So it's not like guilt by association at a distance. This is guilt by associational reality. This is guilt by associational reality. If I went to a house of worship and I had a rabbi, a minister, whatever, who was putting out hate speech, I wouldn't go back. Because A, I don't want to hear it. But B, how would I as a politician sit through that unless I agreed with him and said amen? I'd be in the amen corner. That's what the amen corner meant. Amen, amen, amen. The United States of KKK, amen. And on and on and on. So, all right, so now we know. And it's damning him. It's destroying him. Now to give you the two-cent psychology view. I gave it to you in the last hour. I'll give it to you again. Reverend Wright is like a father to Obama, a son. This is old. You want to get biblical? It's an Abraham and Isaac. He's trying to slay Isaac right here. The father Abraham does not like the fact that Isaac is trying to up him and, in fact, upped him and was shining brighter than he was. No one knew who this preacher was. Now, all of a sudden, he wants to show this guy that he's boss. There's one part of that. There's an egomaniacal old dude man trying to slay the young guy and put him in his place. There's another element here, and it's not just a father and son preacher and flock preacher and attendee kind of deal. There are other elements here that I can't even understand, but I'm sure they're operational. So we have in our face here the fact that race is front and center in this race, and we have a fact, clearly a fact, that if I could tell you, I think Obama's finished. I think the turning point was the uncovering of the Reverend Spite hate speeches, and no matter how they tried, they could not put Humpty together again. That's where the old adage comes from. You know, all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again. Obama is Humpty Dumpty. And Obama fell off the wall. And he's cracked, man. That egg is broken. If you're a little child, you remember that nursery rhyme? All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again. Well, Obama's Humpty. He fell off the wall, but he was really pushed off the wall by Hillary. And he cannot be reconstructed again, because every time he speaks now, everyone sees the cracks in the egg. Okay, there's only so much makeup they can put over the cracks. The fissures are evident to everyone who watches him now. They listen to him speak. No matter how many times he tries to get above it, he can't get above it. All they see behind him and all they hear behind him is Reverend Wright saying those hateful things about this country that most people still love, by the way. See, most of us love this country. We revere the country. We've got nowhere to go. There is no fallback. This is our fallback. That is why we are distasteful. That is why we have disconnect with Washington, because they don't love this country. They love the transnational universe that is not America. It's another universe altogether. That is why they will sell mortgages out and send people into the gutter. That is why they will send our military procurement to France rather than to Seattle. That is why so many horrible things have been happening to our country, is because the big business world, has no nation. They have no nationality. The big business world fundamentally is a group of men and women without a country. They are truly men without a country. But we have nowhere to go. We have no other nation waiting for us. We do not have a house on Lake Geneva. We do not have a condominium in Shanghai in one of the new glass towers. We do not have a villa in wherever, where we can go in a moment's notice and discard our American passport and put down America and call it a land of bumpkins. This is it. Most of us were born here and we're going to die here, and our ancestors are buried here. And we love this country. And that's the reason that a nobody like Obama could even have gotten as far as he did before he fell off the wall. That is why a used up hag like Hillary can even be taken seriously after all the damage she did to this country as a commander in grief. He was commander in chief. She was commander in grief. And that is why a deflated balloon a used up football with no skin left on the pig like McCain can even be running. Because the country's tired right now. The country has lost its ability to even produce a viable candidate for the presidency. The parties are so corrupt and so all-powerful that they can't even produce a viable candidate that America can get excited about, as evidenced by the three amigos here who are running for the presidency. But to come back to what I started with, to come back to it, what I'm saying fundamentally is that America is still loved by the majority of people living in it. And for Obama to not wear a flag pin and then suddenly start wearing one last week when people were starting to question his identity, and because he specializes in identity politics. Never forget what his church is. You know, I'm going to tell you something else. You can take that preacher out of the church, but you can't take that church out of the preacher. If you think that Reverend Spite is alone in these feelings and these sayings, you're wrong. I have watched this church's actions for the last 20 or 30 years. They have been so out of touch with mainstream Christian churches that it's hard to describe it any other way other than to say they're a fringe church. This church, the Trinity United Church, is a fringe church, way out of touch with mainstream America. It is a far-left, radical, Afro-Leninist church. And we have found that their candidate does not have traction in the main of America. So to summarize this segment, one, race is front and center in this race, and Obama is Humpty Dumpty, and all the king's horses and all the king's men cannot put Humpty together again. I'll be right back. This is Michael Savage.
Savage.
We're witnessing sudden candidate death syndrome. I just defined it as a new phrase. I guess the sugar and caffeine is really working. That last segment was good. But you have sudden candidate death syndrome here, SCDS. It's not SIDS, but it's very similar because you're watching a candidate who cannot come back from this. Houston, Texas, Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
You know, Michael, I generally respect your opinions, but I have to totally disagree with you on your take on this, okay? When he's asked by the National Press Club about his affiliation with Louis Farrakhan never said Judaism was a gutter religion. He said Zionism was a gutter religion.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Let's stop right there. You know a gentleman by the name of Martin Luther King Jr.?
Of course.
Do you respect his words?
Yes.
Martin Luther King Jr. said, make no mistake about it, anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. Are you aware of that?
That may have been the case in 1968 or 1967.
Oh, look, you're a diehard radical left-winger, so you think right is correct? How about this soundbite? Let me ask you about this one. Play it for him.
The government lied about inventing the HIV virus as a means of genocide against people of color. Government lied.
So you believe the government invented the AIDS virus?
Well, if you let me answer you, I'll answer you. I don't know, but I know what they did to the...
Wait a minute. You don't know? You actually have a suspicion the government may have invented the AIDS virus to kill people of color?
Well, let me ask you a question, Michael. The Tuskegee...
No, don't ask me a question. Answer me a question. You're here defending Reverend Wright. And you're trying to, you know, contextualize and put it in a nuance in order to trick people. I'm giving you a statement he made. You actually believe the government invented the AIDS virus to kill people of color?
No, I don't, but that doesn't mean that he's a racist because he made that comment.
What does it mean? That he's crazy?
He could be eccentric. There are lots of preachers who are eccentric. Many preachers who are eccentric.
Oh, now he's eccentric. I see. Aha, he's eccentric. That's a new one. So in other words, when a left winger is hateful, they're eccentric. When a right winger is extreme, they're what? They're Hitler?
You give me an example in his statements where he is talking against white America. I'd like to hear us.
Well, didn't you just hear him put down Jews, the thing on the Marines compared to the Romans? You didn't hear that one?
He wasn't putting down Jews. That's not what he said. That is
you're a classic apologist. You're a white apologist. You really are. You're a self-hating man. You actually hate yourself. You hate the body politic of America because you hate your own body. You're a very, very weak man. You're a weak man, and you go to those who hate you and your country.
Savage.
We're going to shift gears for a while here on the Savage Nation from Reverend Jeremiah Spite to a different topic. It's an interesting topic. The book is called Brotherhood of Warriors. The author is a former commander of the Israeli Defense Forces. His name is Aaron Cohn. But before we do it, there's a few things I've got to tell you. If he was only a former commando in the IDF, and if he had only written the Brotherhood of Warriors, I probably wouldn't be as interested. But that's not the whole story. You see, at the age of 18, Aaron Cohn left Beverly Hills, where he grew up, to prove himself in the crucible of the armed forces. And he became part of Israel's most elite security cadre, I guess equal to the American Green Berets and the Navy SEALs. And he went into undercover work, top secret, highly controversial unit that snatched terrorists out of the West Bank. He learned Hebrew. He learned Arabic. He became an expert in urban counterterrorism warfare. He learned the martial art of Krav Maga. On, and the book is Brotherhood of Warriors. It's a fascinating book. The author is, again, Aaron Cohn, who, again, was born in Beverly Hills, was bred in Beverly Hills, but knew something was missing in his life. He didn't just want to be a party animal. Went there, did that. Now he's back in L.A., Hollywood, I guess, and he runs a security agency. And we have him here for your listening pleasure. Aaron Cohn, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
So did I lay it out properly? Did I say it more or less along the lines of how it is?
Honestly, you not only nailed it on the head as I was listening to you say it, I kind of smiled because it's the first time I've actually heard that said out loud.
Well, you grew up in Beverly Hills, and you mean the part where I said you knew something was missing? Is that the part you were relating to?
I just thought the whole thing was interesting. I thought it was great. You know, just the whole opportunity to be able to do this book and tell this story has been a really interesting process. You know, both as an author, but also as someone trying to bring some color out on the IDF. And, you know, I just don't think a lot of Jews know, you know, really what it means to have that state, you know, especially out in Hollywood where it's very left. And, you know, people almost seem pro-Palestinian these days, you know.
Tell me about it. So you went there and you did counterterrorism. You were in a brutal hand-to-hand struggle in one of the missions. You infiltrated a Hamas wedding to seize a wanted terrorist. You posed as an American journalist to set a trap for one of the financiers behind the Dizengoff massacre, and it says you took him down in a brutal hand-to-hand struggle. How did that happen? What happened?
Well, you know, just like the book highlighted, that was a very, you know, classic mission that's not unlike the types of operations that my unit carried out. And, you know, one of the reasons why I put that in the book and to sort of, you know, to sort of break down how it went down, you know, this mission was very typical of how the Israeli counter-terror machine works as opposed to how terrorists work, which is, you know, if we can avoid using lethal force to reduce the amount of risk to innocents, we'll do so, even at the cost of Israeli soldiers, especially highly, you know, trained guys. So with that specific operation, you know, because of my English and because of my ability to be able to, you know, buy a couple of minutes with this guy, you know, I was given the opportunity to be able to deploy on that specific operation, and it was very effective.
So you run an agency now, a security agency back in Beverly Hills where you grew up. I understand several or many of your colleagues are former members of the same unit in Israel. Is that so?
Correct. In fact, I fly back to Israel twice a year, and I have a flyer up in the lunchroom at the unit. You know, if you get out, give me a call.
So you're pretty busy. You got a lot of celebs and other rich people who want the best. Is that it?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. I've been very fortunate to be able to build this, you know, company on the image of the type of, you know, unit that I was, which is, you know, very no-nonsense security. I've been able to take, you know, the different things that I learned growing up in L.A. and be able to apply it, you know, in the Hollywood on the Hollywood side of things. And you know,
that's what I was going to ask you. Aaron, let's say a guy calls you up. He's a celebrity, not the top. Let's say he's a movie guy, but not that famous, but he needs some security, or a news guy. Typically, how many people would you say he needs?
You know, typically, you know, we'll be anywhere around one or two guys, just depending on the threat. First thing we do is we do a threat assessment. I won't do security for anybody who just wants to have his ego rubbed.
you know, depending on the threat, will determine the amount of manpower. But here in Hollywood, you know, it's not the West Bank, it's not Gaza, so we're not going to be deploying an entire team. But having said that, there's been situations where we've had to really, you know, not only, you know, put down some heavy security for, you know, some of these female, you know, actresses who've had stalkers, but we've also had to deploy security just to actively do surveillance on the stalker to help bring that information to the police to help coordinate a restraining order and then a takedown.
Aaron, I was told that there's several different types of so-called bodyguards. One is the big, giant, visibly, you know, frightening-looking guy who walks in ahead of the celebrity. That's usually a showy thing, right? Then I was told that there's the guy you don't even see who's there, who's doing the real protection. Is that true in some regard?
Yeah, it's totally true. Hollywood, you know, a lot of the – it's interesting. Most of the people, the perception that they have of bodyguards are these big 300-pound gorillas, but it's very far from what's going to be effective. A lot of these giant guys will die after running a block of a coronary. The type of security that we try and provide, again, is based on a very government level of service, which is, you know, if you're doing the job right, you're never going to have to be in a situation where you're going to be forced to use a weapon and actually get into a confrontation with someone. It's all pre-planning.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely true. Now, let's say, Aaron, are you there? I think I lost you. Are you there, Aaron? Okay. Aaron, let's say you have a client who has a conceal and carry permit. Would you guard him if he carried his own weapon, or would you ask him to leave it home?
I would let him carry the weapon or her carry the weapon based on one thing. Will they allow us to provide them with the type of training that would be needed to be able to carry it safely so that they don't put one of my agents or someone else, you know, in the immediate area in harm's way if they had to pull it out?
So you do teach weapons usage?
We train SWAT teams and military units. We started doing that in about 2003 all over the country.
Wow. Now, what is the Israeli martial art of Krav Maga? What is it, a derivation of other forms, or is it unique unto itself?
Krav Maga was founded by a very, very interesting guy, a really amazing guy by the name of Emi Lichtenfeld. And he, you know, in the late 40s and the early 50s, was a former judo expert and martial arts expert who started putting together a very no-nonsense self-defense program designed and fit for real combat. And it's morphed into a very popular self-defense. Unfortunately, it's a little bit watered down in the States, but the true essence of the Krav Maga is basically that the best defense is a very aggressive attack. And so it's very brutal. The way they train it in the Army, specifically in my unit, is very, very, I'm going to use the word unenjoyable. But having said that, though, the amount of time that we spend getting good at Krav Maga, again, makes it so that we don't have to use our weapon as much, especially in built-up areas where there's a lot of civilians. And that's one of the things that I don't think people realize, you know, how much the Israeli army puts the soldiers through in terms of Krav Maga in order to reduce the amount of weapon use.
I've seen some training films of a Russian Spetsnaz, if I'm using the forgive me if I'm mispronouncing it, the special forces in Russia. And I've seen their training. It's pretty brutal. Is it along the lines of that training and that martial art that they use, the hand-to-hand judo-like moves?
It is similar. It's similar. I think it's a little more refined. The Spetsnaz is a little fancier, but at the same time, it's very brutal because it was designed for the military, and that's what would be the big similarity between the Russian system and the Israeli system, both equally brutal. I think the difference is that Krav Maga is designed to be taught and remembered very quickly. Just, I think it's a budget thing.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have a lot of time to train soldiers like the U.S. does. They only have a limited amount of time and money. So they needed to come up with a system that they can only teach quickly, but that you'd be able to retain even if they're not using it a lot or practicing it a lot.
How long would it take an average guy in good shape in his 20s to learn this to the point where he's reasonably competent to knock a weapon out of a guy's hand?
I think that you could get very competent in a couple of weeks if you train very intensely all day long. You know, people think it takes 7-8 years to get good at this stuff. It doesn't. Really what it is it's about doing a lot of it in a short period of time, which will make you, you know, really remember the experience. And I think
repetitive motion where it's automatic.
That's right.
Aaron Cohen, the book is Brotherhood of Warriors. Now, in the book, you go beyond your story, which is fascinating, by the way, because very rarely do we see someone leaving Beverly Hills to enlist in the Israeli military and then go into a special operations unit I mean, I've heard of Americans going to Israel and enlisting, you know, helping this and that, but not really going as deeply into it as you did. And then coming back from Israel and opening up an agency like this. But you have ideas on how to protect America and Americans that aren't being used by the government. Do you care to outline any of those?
Yeah, one of the things I thought it was important to really bring away in, you know, what I called the takeaway chapter was, you know, focusing on America first in this country. And, you know, one of the things that I've noticed, especially training, you know, law enforcement agencies around the country, traveling, you know, we need to spend more time focusing on looking at the individual and less time focusing at the on the bags, for instance, at the airports.
Mm-hmm.
And too much political correctness, you know, with this
Obvious.
World. We can't look at people.
Yeah. Right.
You know, it's not even a question of looking at people. We're not looking for Arabs. We're not looking for Middle Easterns. We're looking for behavior. And that's one thing the Israelis are really good at, is looking at the body language, looking at mm-hmm. the eyes of the person traveling on the flight. And one of the main differences, Michael, is that Israel would rather have somebody who's not a terrorist get onto a plane with a weapon than have somebody with a terrorist get on somebody who is a terrorist get on the plane with no weapon.
Why?
That's the fundamental difference.
But wait. Why would you want a terrorist with no weapon to get on a plane over someone with a weapon?
Here's what I'm saying. Israel would rather have somebody with a weapon who's not a terrorist get onto the plane than a terrorist get on the plane with no weapon. Does that make sense? Meaning Israel's looking...
It does to you because you're in the business. I kind of almost get it, but I feel like a child listening to a lesson I can't quite comprehend. I think it makes sense if you're in the security business. So, Aaron, you're busier than you want to be, or you want to be more busy than you are as a security agency? And what's the name of your agency in L.A.?
The company is IMS Security.
IMF? IMF.
IMS Security.
That's an F or an S?
IMS. S is in Sam at the end.
What does it stand for?
Stands for Israeli Military Specialists.
All right, let's say I come to L.A., Michael Savage, controversial talk show host, and I want security for an evening, and I call you up. What would you recommend, and how many people?
I'm probably going to send you one guy. I'm going to make sure that he's dressed very, very low-key. I'm going to coordinate with you and get a list of all of your potential adversaries who could pose a reasonable threat to you out here, both physically and PR-wise, and I'm going to make sure that there's a very well-trained set of eyes on you throughout that time while you're here.
And how much would he cost?
I don't typically talk about the price, but you're probably looking at something between $800 and $1,100 for the day.
For the day. That's pretty reasonable when you consider the situation people can get themselves in. Are there any words for the American people about the naivete? I mean, I'm kind of leading you here. The naivety of this country with regard to the enemy within and what you'd like to see done in this country to protect, I mean, what we should be doing to protect ourselves. I mean, most of us live in dreamland with regard to the potential for danger here, don't we?
Yeah, it's a very dreamy country. In fact, I've always said, and I continue to say, that this country in terms of security has been sleeping for a very long time. 9/11 was a very brief wake-up call, but it seems to me that the country tends to fall, you know, America tends to, you know, conveniently fall back into a very, you know, dangerous lull. There hasn't been a terrorist attack since 9/11. I have, you know, different feelings as to why there hasn't been. But as far as the average person, what they can do, I get asked that question a lot. My answer is there's nothing you can do. There's nothing the average person can do to prevent terror from occurring here in this country on a macro level. But what they can look for is somebody who's trying to steer clear of security forces, somebody with dilated eyes, somebody whose clothes that's mismatched, somebody that's carrying a bag that's too expensive for the clothing they're wearing, or vice versa. A car that's parked in a red zone. You know, typically terrorists will, you know, they'll reconnoiter or surveil a target before they decide to do anything. I think really one of the most important places to be looking at, you know, are these schools. We've had these active shooters, we've had these CHOs, you know, and the situation doesn't seem to go away. And even though the goal of the active shooter, in terms of fundamentals, might not be the same as the terrorist, the outcome is...
Like the Virginia Tech massacre, that kind of thing.
Yeah, the active shooter, the school massacre, that critical response, the Virginia Tech, the Columbine. I just think that that's something we need to really look at.
Aaron, just before you go, I'm curious. Why do you think you were so different than your friends in Beverly Hills that you did this? Did you have a family member who died in the Holocaust? Was your father a tough guy? What happened? What do you think?
Honestly, that's a very tough question. I'm going to give the straight answer. The truth is,
you know what? You don't do it on the radio. Wait till I come to L.A. We'll talk. I'm just interested in what motivates people to step out of like what you'd expect of them. I mean, I went away way different from my family background. I have my own thoughts as to why it happened, and it was dozens of little things that pushed me where I went. So I'm just curious. I mean, because your background and what you're doing is very unusual for a guy who grew up in Beverly Hills.
The reason why I wound up in Israel was because growing up in Beverly Hills and having parents who were in the entertainment industry, to me, was so shallow and so self-righteous that I was looking for something very real. And that's what led me to a kibbutz one summer in Israel, where I met a very interesting guy who turned out to be a general who convinced me to spend the summer there. And after spending the summer there, when I got to Israel to live there, it had given me exactly what I'd been missing in my life, which was, you know, something that wasn't as dry and ridiculous as Hollywood. The irony is that here I am back in Hollywood doing what I love doing on my terms, though.
Last question. When you were a kid growing up, let's say a teenager, were you a fighter? Did you consider yourself a rough kid?
I was, but I was one of those tough guys who defended the kids getting picked on.
No, that's interesting. I didn't expect to ask the question, but conversations have a way of evolving. The book is Brotherhood of Warriors. You heard it first here on the Savage Nation. I highly recommend it. The author is, of course, the gentleman we just spoke with, Aaron Cohn. Aaron, good luck with the book, and thanks for being with us here on the Savage Nation.
Thanks for having me, Michael. I appreciate it.
You're very, very welcome. I'll be right back. The time is 50 minutes after the hour. This is Michael Savage. Savage. Boom, boom, boom. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. I thought it was a great change of pace for the Savage Nation. Beverly Hills to Israel, Special Forces, Commando Missions back to Beverly Hills. A very unusual interview, and I'm glad that we were able to have it here on the show. We're now going to go back to regular programming, which is Humpty Dumpty Obama, and the fact that the Reverend Spite has fundamentally knocked Humpty off the wall. Whether he intentionally did it is irrelevant. Certainly he didn't mean it when he was making his statements years ago. Hillary's team dug it up, and they pushed Humpty off the wall. But now you have, how do you explain that Wright goes out this weekend and now adds insult to injury? For example, what I'm about to play for you was something that Reverend Jeremiah Spite said over the weekend before the NAACP about the U.S. Marines listen to 33.
It was soldiers of the 3rd Marine Regiment of Rome who had fun with Jesus, who was mistreated as a prisoner of war. An enemy of the occupying army stationed in Jerusalem to ensure the mopping up action of Operation Israeli Freedom.
Wow. He gets everyone in that one. He gets the Italians. He gets the Jews. He gets the cross maker. He gets the sandal maker and the candlestick maker, too. So he's pretty good at his work of insulting everybody at the same time. He'd make a good talk show host. Perhaps that's the job he's looking for in Chicago. He may even be syndicated, for all we know, very shortly. But he certainly has pushed Humpty off the wall. And as I said, Humpty, I think that the egg is broken. And I asked you earlier, do you think that Reverend Jeremiah Spite is helping or hurting Obama? There's no question in my mind which way that one goes. But before this hour just winds away, it's rolling along so quickly, we got to play the comedian-in-chief over the weekend at the Correspondents' Dinner in Washington, D.C. I was invited, but I couldn't go because of various reasons, and I'm almost glad I didn't. I don't think I would have been very happy listening to Bush. Listen to this.
We don't have more presidential candidates here tonight, like any. Senator McCain's not here. He probably wanted to distance himself from me a little bit. You know, he's not alone. Jenna's moving out, too. You know, I'm not sure what I'm going to do next.
Oh, do you think that's appropriate? This is Nero fiddling while Rome burns. Do you think him doing a Bob Hope is appropriate in a time like this when there are people out of work, people being thrown out of their houses, gas going through at the $5 a gallon, and him telling jokes? It's Nero fiddling.
Savage.
Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Inventing the HIV virus as a means of genocide against people of color. That is a lie.
I am not here for political reasons. I am not a politician. I know that fact will surprise many of you because many in the corporate-owned media have made it seem as if I have announced that I'm running for the Oval Office. I am not running for the Oval Office. I've been running for Jesus a long, long time, and I'm not tired yet.
It was soldiers of the 3rd Marine Regiment of Rome who had fun with Jesus, who was mistreated as a prisoner of war. An enemy of the occupying army stationed in Jerusalem to ensure the mopping up action of Operation Israeli Freedom.
Yeah, well, that's not the Nation of Islam speaking. It's Barack Obama's preacher. Obviously, Obama's been pushed off the wall. He's Humpty Dumpty, and all the king's horses and all the king's men will not put Humpty together again, because this guy is amazing to me. This is astounding. The sudden infamy of Reverend Spite proves that race is front and center in this race all over again. Obama didn't want it to go there. He knew that he could never win if he made race the issue. If he became a class warfare guy, or worse yet, a race warfare guy, he wouldn't be where he is today. He knew how to play the game, and he probably is not into that, given that he's a younger guy. And the people of color that I know, who there's not a lot of them, the younger ones really are not into it. The educated people are not. And Obama, I'm sure, is not really heavily into the race thing. However, he's been dragged into it by his own preacher and his own associations. Whether he likes it or not, that's where it's at. I don't know how he's going to get out of this. So that's topic number one. Topic number two is this, and that is the race issue is front and center in this race. Do you think Obama's candidacy is over because of this? I mean, let's be clear here. The majority of American voters happen to be of European descent. They are of Caucasian ancestry. They're Caucasian people. And they don't very much like a guy who tells them that who has a preacher who says it's the United States of KKK. OK, it kind of like offends us, to be honest with you. And I don't know how in the world you can't see this offense. How many times have I had to say this to you on this show? And I'll say it again. What if John McCain, it turns out, had gone to a church for 20 years where the preacher or reverend at night was a member of the Ku Klux Klan with the pointy hat and he burnt crosses? Do you think he'd be able to get away with saying, well, I like him, but he's like a crazy uncle, a weird uncle, like an eccentric uncle? Or do you think the media would say he's not fit for office? Can't you people just see your hypocrisy? There's been one Republican after another thrown out of office for merely associating. Bob Jones University, for example. Guy walks in there to have a club soda, and already he's a Ku Klux Klan member. Another one, Trent Lott lost the speaker's position because he knew somebody who was with somebody on the cotton plantation. That kind of thing. And that's because the media is so whacked out far to the left. Don't you understand that? I personally think that he's finished. That Obama's over. The egg, you know, Humpty Dumpty, you know, all of that. All the king's horses and all the king's men cannot put Humpty together again, and he's Humpty. It's over. That's what I think. Maybe you disagree with me. I'll take your calls. And there are other stories out there. One of the big ones on michaelsavage.com is the rapid, amazing meltdown of not only the New York Times, but the other newspapers. The circulation debacle is unbelievable to watch. The latest circulation shows the New York Times went down 9% on Sunday. The Daily went down 3.8%. They lost more than 150,000 copies on Sunday circulation. And let me tell you something. It's going to be 150,001 this week because I get the Sunday edition of the New York Times. I'm in the media. I grew up on this paper. But when I picked up the paper this weekend and the Sunday magazine section shows two men married at home, I said, this is it. I can't take it anymore. I don't want this vile propaganda every Sunday on my kitchen table. It upsets me. I don't want to look at this garbage anymore. I'm sick of it. And it's almost as though they know they're offending their own listener readership base, and they continue to do it out of spite. This is insanity. And the same thing is going on, by the way, not only in the newspaper business. It's going on in other aspects of the media. There are people in the radio industry who are doing the very same thing to the radio audience, by the way. But I can't talk about it because I certainly treasure my own circulation, so to speak. But believe me, it's not too far removed what's going on in the radio business in certain quarters. But the Washington Post, 3.5% down. Sunday down 4.3%. I won't read you all the figures. Let's look at the others. Here's a Murdoch publication, the New York Post. 3% daily down, 8% down on Sunday. Orange County Register, okay, conservative, plunged 11.9% daily. Plunged 5.3% on Sunday. You know that my circulation is larger than some of these newspapers. You know, I didn't even realize that myself. I'm kind of like, in a certain way, living in my own bubble. Here's an example. My hometown, San Francisco, The Chronicle, a once very good newspaper. Daily circulation is 370,000. That's each day. Do you know that my average quarter hour is larger than that on a national basis than a local newspaper? Boston Globe, Boston, fell 8.3% to 350,000. Miami Herald, around the country, it's amazing to me. Chicago Tribune, 4.4%, and largely on Sunday as well went down. What in the world is going on is the question. It can't be that all the advertising revenue is going to the internet. There just simply isn't enough internet advertising to account for this. No, my friends. It's a lot more than just advertising going to the internet. What it is, and I'll repeat it over and over again, is the far left nature of the so-called journalists. When they keep putting out publications that in some ways exceed the commentary of Reverend Jeremiah Wright, which is so offensive to so many people, why would anyone buy that newspaper? Do you want to pick up a newspaper on a Sunday that shows two men married in a kitchen in Manhattan and accept that as the norm? How many times do you want to see Ellen DeGeneres looking like what she is, kind of a sad sack, goofy clown on the Sunday paper? How many times do you want to pick up the magazine section and see another anti-American hero glorified by these American leftists? The answer is not many of you want to do it anymore. The older people still read the paper. I admit that. The younger people don't. They don't read it at all. They don't read it at all. They go on the internet. They have a few websites. Boom. They see the headlines. And maybe they go past the headlines, and even that's questionable. They could care less about the news, incidentally. So the world's changed around them, and they, instead of recognizing what's happening to them, are making it worse. And it's the same in the radio business, by the way. The world is changing around the people in the radio business, and instead of recognizing which way the wind blows, and I'm the best weatherman in the radio business, they continue to insult their own listenership with selections they're making and choices they're making with regard to programming, in my opinion. This story, by the way, is up on michaelsavage.com. I recommend that you go look at it. I'd also like to take some of your calls on Reverend Wright, why you think newspaper readership is declining, and other topics. There's another huge story, and a good one, a great story that must not be overlooked, probably the most important story of contemporary times. The U.S. Supreme Court has upheld photo ID law for voters in Indiana. Do you realize that this is a great victory for democracy and a great victory for America? The Supreme Court ruled just today, this is historic, that states may require and can require voters to produce photo ID without violating their constitutional rights, validating Republican-inspired voter ID laws. Now, the Democrats have falsely argued and using the mouthpieces of the ACLU. They, by the way, the ACLU brought the case on behalf of Indiana voters. The ACLU came up with these spurious arguments that the law was unconstitutional. It was an effort to discourage elderly, poor, and minority voters. What a bunch of rubbish. Men died. The military cemeteries are filled with the most sacred act in America, which is voting. Voting safely. And one of the safety valves of voting is that you're an American citizen and you don't vote more than once. But these left-wing rats, of you, as you well know, in the ACLU, they hate America. And the best way to undermine America, as you well know, is to make sure that illegal aliens vote or that their liberal friends can vote from New York to Boca Raton and back again. This is a monster victory for all of us. Now, what this means with regard to this election is even more important. Notice that the Supreme Court today upheld a photo ID law for a state. What is the state? Indiana. Where is the next primary? Indiana. This means that the rent-a-mob cannot be moved around to vote for Obama. The rent-a-mobs cannot be bussed in from Chicago, if that's what they were going to do, and vote in Indiana, even though they might not be, may not be registered in Indiana. Do you understand this? What is so hard to understand that you need to show an ID, photo ID to vote? You know how many years I've gone into voting booths here in the Bay Area of San Francisco? And I've said to them, here's my ID. And these little old communist ladies in white tennis sneakers say, oh, don't show me that. And I stare at them and say, what do you mean don't show you that? Why don't you want to see my ID? Oh, don't show me that. That's like, wow. You're showing me your ID to prove you're an American citizen and you actually live here? We can't have that, the League of Women Voters. It's really the League of Women Vote Fraud Getters. They're behind it. All of these left-wing radical wobblies love the fact that they could bust people from precinct to precinct, which is why we have such a left-wing tilted government in this country. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
By the way, those of you who have not heard Reverend Jeremiah Spite's hate speech and say we're taking it out of context, please go to michaelsavage.com tonight or tomorrow and listen to Obama's pastor's hate speech, and you'll hear some of them. You'll make up your own mind. How many times can they apologize for him? You took it out of context. You don't know what he was really saying. How can you make up such nonsense as that? The man says the government invented the AIDS virus to kill people of color. On the face of it, that's insane. And hateful, by the way. First of all, let's take the assumption, if you want to be insane, that the government could conduct black research like this and come up with an AIDS virus. Let's say it's done. Now, how would they target people of color when the largest audience, or the number one demographic for having gotten the AIDS virus are white males, white male homosexual? What sense does this make? How could he make a statement like that unless he's a man who hates white people and wants to steam up a race war in the country? How could anybody apologize for this piece of steaming offal? I'm sick of this whitewash. Jim Lehrer, that disgraced old hack. Jim Lehrer, a puffball interview. They're tripping over themselves to make this hateful race monger look like a nice man. He's an evil man. He's a throwback to horrendous times. He's trying to lynch this country and turn the cities into smoldering ruins. That's what this right is trying to do. He'd love to see it burn, baby, burn. We don't need another man like this. We don't need another hater. This is not a descendant of Martin Luther King Jr. This man is not a descendant of Martin Luther King Jr. He's not an affiliate of Martin Luther King Jr. I mean, he is not an associate. He's not a colleague of Martin Luther King Jr. He's an associate of several other people of that persuasion who I don't have to mention. And I will tell you, this man is the last thing this country needs right now. The last thing. And it's the last thing that Humpty Dumpty Obama needs right now. But I'm not worried about Obama. I'm worried about the cities burning down. At the same time, you have the so-called Reverend, the great global warming expert, who, as you know, was hired by Al Gore with a lot of money that he raised from various carbon credits. He was able to buy Newt Gingrich, Reverend, what was his name? What's that other guy, that fraud, that other one? No. The white guy. I can never remember his name. That con man. I never liked him. Never trusted him. That Christian broadcasting guy. I forget his name. He doesn't strike me as... Yeah, Robertson. He puts Robertson and Sharpton on the panel to talk about global warming, you hear? Now, what in the world credentials does Al Sharpton have on global warming and meteorology? He has a degree in weather? He has a degree in meteorology? I don't think the guy went to college, let alone high school. I have no idea. But in of all the people on earth to pick to push the shyster job on global warming, would you pick this guy, a rabble-rouser like this, a street hustler like that? How could you do this unless you yourself are a complete and total BS artist, as Al Gore is? Remember, Al Gore's original fortune was made in coal. That's right, in the mining and the burning of coal. His father was the president, after he left the Senate, of Occidental Coal Company. His father was the president of Occidental Coal, Al Gore's father. Nothing wrong with that. Coal is a very useful energy source. Nothing wrong with it at all. So Al Gore grew up in a very wealthy home. His father made a lot of money in the Senate and as president of Occidental Coal, where he worked for Armand Hammer. You know something about Armand Hammer. Then when Al Gore was vice president, in his last year, he did something very odd. He did something very, very odd with the U.S. Naval Petroleum Reserve. He privatized it. He took our stores of naval oil, bunker fuel, in case of an emergency that was stored in, I think, the Carlsbad Caverns. I don't know where. Somewhere down in Southern California. And he sold it on the market. And he said he was doing it to privatize the oil supply. Very questionable. Very odd to deplete our naval petroleum reserve like that. But Al Gore got away with a lot of things in his life. Inventing the internet we know was fraudulent, things of that nature. The guy is a complete and total hype artist, in my estimation. And you know what? He's not the only one. This way to the egress. It's a big world. There's a lot of con men. Never paid too much attention to him. Now he foists this fantasy of global warming on people, and he gets children hysterical. He forces them to watch his fake movie. And the people are hysterical now. The world's coming to an end because of Al Gore. Again, if you want to believe it. But who in the world could believe a man who would reach into the gutter and get a rabble-rouser like Al Sharpton to speak about global warming? Unless you're crazy yourself. Al Sharpton and Pat Robertson and Newt Gingrich now are experts on meteorology. And Newt Gingrich, who is, in my mind, a political prostitute and has been for a long time, has the audacity last week to say, well, the reason I did it was we have to have a conservative viewpoint in the global warming debate. Yeah, Newt. Yeah, Newt, sure. Tell your story walking, as my father would say. Newt, tell your story walking. It doesn't play. It stinks on dry ice.
Savage.
Christian church, I would say we can do all things through Christ who strengthens us. If I were in a Jewish synagogue, I would say, is anything too hard for Elohim? If I were in a Muslim mosque, I would say, inshallah, we can do it.
All right, take a walk. You're not in a mosque. You're not in a mosque. You're not in a church. You're not in a synagogue. You're in front of the NAACP. Then you're in front of the National Press Club. Okay, you're in a political arena and you're hocking us in the head with this garbage already. Stop it. Now, the one who should be telling him to get off the stage, of course, is Humpty Dumpty Obama. Because all the king's horses and all the king's men are never going to put Humpty together again after this. This guy's out of control, by the way. He's done. I believe he's done. Detroit, Michigan, SUNY, you disagree? Go ahead, please.
Well, I didn't say whether I agreed or disagreed. Hello?
Yes, sir. What is it you wanted to say?
I wanted to say that, like Wendell Anthony said last night, the thing is bigger than Obama. It's bigger than Wright. The thing I'm speaking of is Hillary Clinton's research. What she's done and what they were trying to say is that she made an indirect attack on the black church because the man in question preaches as a lot of ministers do, and that's what Wendell Anthony was saying. He's saying it's bigger than all of them, you know.
Well, wait, I don't buy the argument that it's now attacking the black church. How do you buy that? Not all black churches preach this.
Well, it's not for you. That's what they were saying. That's what Wendell Anthony was saying. So it's not.
Wait, hold on. You're telling me that it's the mainstream black church that teaches the government invented the AIDS virus to kill people of color?
No, but it is, no, I'm saying the preaching and teaching style. Now, what
about... Oh, yeah, stylistically, I agree 100%. Totally, I agree. But this is not about style. This is about what he's saying.
Yeah, but now, see, this is what a lot of people have to understand. It's certain things that black folks say, and I'm a Muslim. First, I want to let you know that. It's certain things that black folks say in their church. For example, Ku Klux Klan. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're talking about the KKK. No, what that's referring to is probably a form of systemic racism. That's all.
So it's a code word for a way of looking at the white world.
No, not the white world. And see, that's another thing. Because we say KKK, we don't mean white people, all white people. No. We don't mean with like the everyday person.
Well, wait a minute. Reverend Wright was very specific when he said the U.S. of KKK. He was saying the entire nation he was branding as a Ku Klux Klan nation. You may not mean it, but he certainly seemed to have said the entire nation was a Ku Klux Klan nation.
No, and that's what I'm trying to get across to you. We have certain code words. He wasn't referring to the entire nation. He was referring to the system.
That's well, hold on a minute. The system. Wait a minute. The system. This system is a Ku Klux Klan system? That's after 30 years of affirmative action, generous welfare, every program known to mankind that could be used? It's still a system that hates black people?
No. And see, that's what I'm saying.
But how do you explain so many younger black people who don't buy into that victimhood and we're hated and move ahead in life the best they can, that they don't want to be seeing the world that way? How do you explain that they don't buy into it?
Well, a lot of us don't, but we have to say, Mr. Savage, that does racism exist by the, like the caller before me said, the powers that be?
Of course it exists, Sunny, it does exist, but it exists in all ethnic groups, more so amongst some elements within the ethnic groups than others, but it exists. It's not just white towards black. You know within your own community there's racism. Just by saying there's a KKK as a code word is indicative of a racist viewpoint.
Can I give you an example of what he means when he say racism? Just let me give you one example. See, a lot of people get racism and prejudice confused. Racism is a practice by a race that's in power that's able to manipulate the policy, the money, the economy, and the philosophy of a nation. All black people can't do that. All Mexicans can't do that. But whites can in this situation. But if we go...
Well, thank God. Thank God whites can. I don't want to live in Mexico. Do you?
No, I don't either.
Do you want to live in Zimbabwe? I don't think you do.
Or Iwanda.
No, so I'm saying this is like, it's a strange thing. You sound like a very reasonable, unhateful man, by the way. You sound like a man who's not just doing this to sound reasonable. I think you are a reasonable man by what I hear in your voice. I just don't buy into this U.S. of KKK business. Sonny, hold on for a minute. Listen to the actual clip of the KKK. Please play it.
And they will not only attack you if you try to point out what's going on in white America, U.S. of KKKA.
U.S. of KKK, white America, U.S. of KKKA. He didn't say the administration of the system. He said the white America, U.S. of KKKA.
Okay. Now, Mr. Savage, and I'm going to say this because I know you have to move on.
No, actually, I don't have to move on. I'll stay right here. Keep going.
Okay, what he's saying, if you play that tape, if you take that to another church, any other church, and you play that in front of the audience, and you say, somebody tell me what he's saying. What he's saying, he's not saying the everyday person like me or like you or the guy in the factory or in the donut shop. What he's saying is, let's just say the Bushes. And the reason why I say the Bushes is because one time you even pointed out earlier in your show on their connection to on how they just out for the money and who they stepping
on. Wait a minute. Hold on a minute. How do you explain the fact that the Bush administration, which I have plenty to criticize about them, took $15 billion of taxpayer money and gave it to Africa to fight AIDS? Then on top of it all, to be a doubly nice guy, he recently came, he's going to give another $10 billion. That shows racism?
Nah, that don't show racism. That shows welfare. But because
what more can he do? He didn't cause AIDS in Africa. He's taking the generosity and the compassion of the American people, probably a little too generously, in my opinion, in a country that's almost bankrupt, and disseminating our tax dollars to a foreign nation for a disease we did not cause. But wait, here's another one. You're an intelligent man. You seek the truth. You probably believe your religion mandates that you seek the truth and to be fair to other people. Please listen to this piece from Reverend Jeremiah Spite on the AIDS virus. Listen to this one.
The government lied about inventing the HIV virus as a means of genocide against people of color. Government's lie.
Genocide against people of color. The demographic which the highest incidence of AIDS are white homosexual males.
What he was referring to is back in, I think, probably about the mid-80s, there was, it wasn't called AIDS, it was called something else, and there was, the Congress had passed some kind of law to get this chemical weapon started that needed a special building. But the bottom line was, the AIDS virus, it was called by another name, was developed. It was just the foundation.
See, now you believe total propaganda that was disseminated by Louis Farrakhan in the Nation of Islam. And so for you to be buying into this is really unfortunate because it's a lie. Every scientist on Earth, every valid scientist on Earth knows that the origin of the AIDS virus was not in a laboratory, but in the animal population. It originated amongst, if I remember correctly, a certain strain of monkeys in Africa. And from eating the meat that was not cooked properly, the virus jumped into the human population. That's known as a zoonotic infection. You may say that sounds far-fetched, but I got to explain to you and everyone else, Sunny, this is not so far-fetched because the origin of syphilis going back many centuries is also thought to have originated in an animal population. Strangely enough, amongst llamas, you know, the animals of South America. And I read, the last I checked, that the conquistadors came over to this continent to wreak havoc upon the Native Americans, to take the gold out of them, thar hills, in the Aztec communities. And they were kind of like hung up because they left their old ladies back in Spain. And the nearest thing to their wife was a llama. And as a result, the syphilis organism, in this case, a spirochete, entered the human being. The human being in the form of the conquistador took it back to Europe, and that was a zoonotic infection, for example. So that's the actual origin. To keep repeating this ignorant statement that it was invented in a laboratory, I don't think does any community a service. If it's one thing we need in this world today, and it doesn't matter what race we are, is some scientific knowledge.
But I don't know. Okay, as far as the AIDS virus, I don't know for sure, and I'm just saying, there's some things I read, just like you just described the syphilis, I read that. But getting back to the point I'm just trying to make, and that I think Hillary has opened up something that's going to backfire on her.
Well, it will backfire on her in the black community. It already has, because it was her team. We all know it was not McCain. His team's not smart enough to have done this. I mean, let's be clear about that. They're so nice and they're so middle-of-the-road mainstream corporate America, they wouldn't have even thought to do this. But Hillary's a street fighter, and she comes from a pretty tough machine. They're the ones who dug up the right stuff, and it's caused terrible havoc upon the Obama campaign. That we can agree upon, yes?
Yes, we can.
Wait a minute. So what you're saying to me is the black community knows for a fact that it was the Hillary campaign that did this. You're also saying that, I assume. Is that correct?
Well, I'm going to say this. I don't know what the, I can't. I'm not a spokesman for the black community, but I'll say this. I believe, personally, that, yes, she did. And I think you believe it because you said earlier that her research team or her research came up with these.
That's what I believe. I certainly believe that. I don't think it came out of the blue. Somebody went and did some research on Obama's pastor, and then they started listening. They knew he was incendiary. They knew the Trinity United Church is a pretty left-wing radical church, and they dug up his most incendiary speeches, and they ran them. So, yeah, that's where that came from. But I don't think that the black community was going for Hillary in general. Do you?
Yeah, oh, man. Believe me. Believe me. Trust what I'm saying. She had more supporters than she thought.
And you're saying now she does not because of this.
I think she lost a lot because what Wendell Anthony is saying, if you listen to what he didn't say, if you go back and listen to his introduction to the Reverend, he said this is an attack on a black institution.
And I don't buy that at all because I do not think it's systemic. I think it's an individual man who's a bomb thrower, an incendiary man who'll say anything to get attention. And, he can say anything he wants. We live in a free country. But when he starts saying that the government invented the AIDS virus, do you think he's doing the black community a service? Do you think he's speaking for the black community by disseminating that kind of ignorant thought, that damaging thought, which makes young black people want to kill? What would you do if you were a young, ignorant black guy and you're told the government invented the AIDS virus? You'd want to go kill a white person. So to me, this is very dangerous rhetoric. It's a lie, and it's not doing anyone a favor. But Sunni, I certainly appreciate your diligence in calling the Savage Nation. We're just short of time, and I do have to move on. I'll be right back. Savage.
Soldiers of the 3rd Marine Regiment of Rome who had fun with Jesus, who was mistreated as a prisoner of war. An enemy of the occupying army stationed in Jerusalem to ensure the mopping up action of Operation Israeli Freedom.
Let's see, he gets the Italians, the Jews, the cross maker, the sandal maker, and the candlestick maker. No, I don't think you can write this off as code words or he's speaking about a community at large. This is a man who has specialized and is enjoying the moment of fame or infame or infamy to continue to broadcast hate speech. He's entitled to do it. We live in a free country. The loser here is not me. It's not you. It's Obama. The fact is Obama wasn't going to win anyway. He had a very small demographic. A very small group of demographics that liked him. It's just that the media, the same whack jobs who applauded when Wright appeared for 60 seconds, the so-called National Press Club, these far-left, anti-American, anti-family, anti-heterosexual, anti-Christian jerks who write for the newspapers, made it seem as though Obama was loved by the mainstream. And I kept saying to you over and over again, have you voted yet? I haven't voted yet. You haven't been heard from. They make it sound like the election was over already. 2 months ago, you would have thought he was already the president of the United States. Now, I'm telling you that it's only because there's been no election that he can get away with it because the bias of the press. I got to play for you again when Wright is introduced at the National Press Club. I want you to listen to clip 32. Listen to this.
Reverend Wright, we welcome you to the press club and to take some questions from this gigantic audience we have here of reporters. And so, Reverend Wright, the floor is now yours.
You wonder why the New York Times lost 9% of its Sunday circulation. You wonder why the Washington Post had a drop of 4% of its Sunday paper. Why the New York Post dropped 3%, 8% on Sunday. Why the LA Times dropped more than 40,000 copies a day. That's the audience you're listening to, the so-called society professional journalists sitting there applauding for a black racist. So now you wonder? I don't wonder. I've known it for years. I've been trying to tell the people in the newspaper business, I could increase your circulation. You give me 3 months with any newspaper in this country, you give Michael Savage the consultantship, and I don't want it. I'm just absolutely don't want it. But you give it to me for 3 months, I could make that circulation go up 9% after 3 months. Just stop publishing pro-homosexual, anti-American, anti-military, anti-police, et cetera, stories. Stop it. You think I'm making it up? Pick up yesterday's New York Times Sunday Magazine section. came for me in the driveway in a blue wrapper. I didn't open it till this morning because I was busy yesterday. And what's the magazine section? Two men married in New York in their apartment. I don't want to read that. I don't want to pay for that. Good luck to them if that's what they want. I don't like it on my kitchen table. It's like getting pornography, softcore pornography from the newspapers. So that's why the circulation is plummeting. Turn it around. Why don't you support a pregnant woman married to a man? Why don't you support a man married for 40 years who raised a family with grandchildren? Why don't you support so many things that we love about this country instead of hating it? That's why the newspapers are in decline. But they're the reason you thought Obama really had a chance. He never had a chance. Trust me on this. It's going to be a race between Hillary and McCain, as it has been from the beginning. McCain was, you don't even remember what happened. Why did Romney get knocked out of the race? You think that happened by accident? Romney was way ahead of McCain. McCain was a busted suitcase last summer. A busted suitcase that you find in an airport lost and found. That's what he looked like. That's who he had become. Used up, has been a hack. What happened? In one primary, they moved, and overnight, they changed the rules and they moved Romney out. They destroyed him, and they moved this hack in. They didn't want Romney to win. The power structure made the decision a long time ago. It's time for the Democrats to take the helm. That's the way the game is played as I see it. 8 years Democrat, 8 years so-called Republican. Then you pass it back to the Democrats. Then they get the blame. And then they say the other guys gave us a rotten thing that we inherited. It's not us. Give us time to fix it. And then you believe that for a number of years. They're trying to fix it. They're adjusting the clock. And you say, well, maybe, yeah, because Bush wrecked everything. She'll fix it. And then after they get through raping the Treasury and selling out the last bits of the infrastructure, then the Republicans come back and they say, we're going to save this country because we're more patriotic and we're better for national security, and so forth and so on it goes with God's will and your listenership. So shall I go on and so shall America go on, because the founding fathers were geniuses, where even these scoundrels can't destroy the country.
Savage.